Great. Well, welcome. Oh, yes. So we will read, but not at the beginning. So, yes, we do think it's a good thing to read God's word for ourselves. You're not just going to have to take my word for it. But before we look at our chapter for today, which is Exodus 2, I'm just going to give a brief intro, and then we're going to have a bit of discussion trying to look at how Exodus 2 fits in. So just to set us up, I think today from Exodus, I think God has a challenge for us. And it's quite a difficult challenge. The challenge is, can we laugh at the power of death? Or can we laugh at the devil when he says, I've got you and there's no escape from your sin? Because if we admit it, these are our big, powerful enemies as Christians. Actually, they're everyone's big, powerful enemies. And they're nasty ones. Death is one of the few certainties in the time before Jesus returns. And it's the great power that we all must imagine, will claim us one day. Or at least almost all. I've been doing a bit of internet research, and I've seen various views that there'll be effectively a cure for old age. And aging you'll be able to increase life expectancy at faster than 1 year per year. Which sounds good, doesn't it? So that sort of brings with it the promise of immortality. Although on the other hand, I read something on my way here which said, well, there will be a cure for old aging, but to be honest, most of us won't be able to afford it. So that's a bit depressing, isn't it? But for me, I think death is with us to stay, sadly. Even in the United States, a developed nation, in the last few years, life expectancy has actually been falling on just the average across the population. So we can't conquer death. The best we can do is ignore it. And we certainly couldn't laugh at its power. It's anything but laughable. And if you're anything like me, your default reaction is to shudder because it's a scary, unassailable enemy. So that's one thing, death. But sin, when we do think about it, which is even more rare, is just as bad or worse. And that's because sin is a force multiplier on death. It makes it so much worse. Because sin brings with death the sting of meeting our Creator, the righteous judge, as a creature who's rejected him. And imagine being tried for a capital offence. It's high treason, and you know you're guilty. But you're hoping to find a clever legal argument to get you off. Maybe some people here could try and help. But your defence says, sorry, seems to be an open and sharp case, not much we can do here. Plead guilty, and you'll hang. I mean, I'd be terrified if I were to hear that. Well, I'm sorry to be starting on such a heavy note, but if any one of us was tried on for treason against our Creator, we'd be guilty and proven guilty, and the right verdict would condemn us. So sin has terrifying consequences. Well, given all of this, how on earth could we laugh at death's power and the condemnation that sin brings? Well, Exodus 2, as we'll see today, and through the lens of Jesus and the New Testament, that's going to show us, hopefully. But before we dig into Exodus 2 and the story of Moses, I'd like us to step back and check what the first half of the book of Exodus is trying to achieve for Israel as they read it back in the day, and then prepare ourselves to try and apply it now. So that's going to be our first discussion session. So please, for the next 8 minutes, work through discussion one. This can be very sort of very, very tight on timing, so don't spend too long on the first two questions. It costs about 8 minutes on discussion one. And I'll come back up. Great, can I call us back to together? Great, so we're just about to read the passage, so I'll call Christian up in a second. But I hope you saw around tables, we certainly didn't, that the first half of Exodus is to teach future generations of Israel to know and fear God, and therefore to believe in him as their saviour. So it's kind of it's the bedtime story for the child, and it's the school history project for the teenager, and it's the theological text for the adult, all at the same time. And it's all there to remind them what God is like, and to teach them to fear him. So we're going to see how Exodus 2 teaches us to fear him as well. There's a lot to see, And I think we'll be continuing to see this, sort of how and why to fear God, throughout our summer series, actually, through Exodus. But for now, we'll see what Exodus 2 has to say. So as Christians, kindly volunteer to read my column up. So starting at verse 22 of chapter 1.
So that's Exodus chapter 1, verse 22, to the end of chapter 2. And you can find that on page 45 of the church Bibles. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, "Every son that is born to the Hebrews you shall cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live." Now a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes and daubed it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, while her young women walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, because, she said, "I drew him out of the water." One day, when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. When he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, "Why do you strike your companion?" He answered, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely the thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. The shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. When they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you have come home so soon today?" They said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of these shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock." He said to his daughters, "Then where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread." And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter, Zipporah. She gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew.
Thanks, Christian. Wonderful. Well, let's dive into the action of Exodus 2 now. So we're here on the handouts at the first point, Moses versus Pharaoh, the underdog story. Well, things never look that great for Moses in this passage, do they? I mean, look down with me at chapter 1, verse 22. See there, Moses starts off as a baby born condemned to death under a policy of state-sanctioned genocide. Says, "Kill all the baby boys." I think I've always been able to assume in my life so far that police and the rule of the law are on the side of justice, generally. How terrible it must be when the law is injustice, even when it's genocide. And how hopeless it must seem against all that power for a defenseless little baby. And just imagine the panic in that household when the baby started to cry. Mother would rush to quieten him down with worried glances out the window to see if anyone's coming. And things only get slightly better in chapter 2, verse 3. There, Mum puts her 3-month-old baby in a boat and sends him off for his first sailing trip. I mean, how long do you think it was before the baby Moses started crying? He's bawling inconsolably, abandoned in that little boat. Well, he does grow up, but let's skip ahead to verses 14 and 15. Now Moses is a fugitive. He's on the run as a murderer. He's afraid, he's alone, and all he can do is run away. Again, he does escape, and as a political refugee in Midian, he raises a family. Or at least it's ended well. Moses is safe, right, with a family. Sadly, I don't think so, even then. Look at Moses' son's name, Gershom. That means sojourner, someone who's not home or has no home. So Moses is still, even at the end of the passage, in some sense, he's homeless. He hasn't settled down with a family, and it's not a happy ending to a tough story. Moses really is constantly fighting bad situations. But that's not it, just it. If you look a bit closer, so it's not just Moses against bad situations. Did you notice that Exodus 2 makes the enemy very personal? It's Pharaoh. Who wants to kill the babies in chapter 1, verse 22? Pharaoh. Who wants to kill Moses in verse 15? Pharaoh. Moses versus Pharaoh. Well, so let's step into the ring for a few bouts. Now, this is where I'd apologise to my wife for using a sporting analogy. So sorry, you probably won't forgive me for this one. Anyway, in the red corner, it's the king of Egypt. It's the law unto himself. It's Pharaoh. I can't do the voice, can I? Anyway. And in the blue corner, it's hidden baby, crouching outcast. It's the hit and run Sandman. It's Moses. Well, who do you think? Who's your money on in this bout? Well, on the face of it, it's not a fair contest at all, is it? The odds are completely stacked against Moses. It's a baby versus a king, after all. And so that's why I call this an underdog story. But actually, I'm wrong. It's not an underdog story. In fact, I think the best thing, please cross that out on your handouts, put a line through that, the underdog story. And at the end of the next discussion time, see if you can come up with a better strap line for this bit, Moses versus Pharaoh. So, on to discussion 2. Over to you to see how it goes, and you can correct my bad headings. This time I'm giving you about 6 minutes, so you know, fast progress. Okay, I'm going to call us back together again. Well, I hope you saw. Isn't Pharaoh just comically hopeless, actually, in this passage? And he thinks he can wipe out a nation, but he can't kill an ordinary little baby. And after what we saw last week, the midwives defying him, a Levite woman makes a mockery of this cast the babies into the Nile policy. And then even his own family don't obey him. So he ends up with an Israelite grandson. And he's paying out of his royal budget to have the own baby's mother take care of him. Well, at least Moses, given this upbringing, he should be sympathetic to Egypt. He's got a well-rounded education. Maybe he could even be groomed to help Israel become assimilated properly into Egypt. But no. I think you probably saw he's definitely an Israelite, isn't he? Through and through. As he defends his people against his grandfather's people. And then Pharaoh can't even catch his grandson and bring him to justice as Moses escapes him. And then finally, death takes Pharaoh first, whilst whilst Moses gets to raise his own family. So, I mean, it's totally pathetic, isn't it? It's kind of silly Pharaoh for thinking he was in control of this situation. God has made a mockery of him as you read this story. And Pharaoh suddenly looks weak and powerless. Did you notice, though, that God isn't mentioned explicitly through this? Although it's definitely him at work, isn't it? I think he's not mentioned because showing Pharaoh up like this and defeating him is not a challenge for God. Pharaoh is no match at all for God. And Pharaoh, ends up in the ground. And it's a kind of awkward situation. I need a new Pharaoh, actually. So to work out why God mocks Pharaoh in this way, we've got to look back. And the context of Genesis and Exodus 1 has set up this challenge. At this point, either Pharaoh wins, and Israel has no land and no privilege, or God wins, and Israel has a place of their own, and God's blessings. It wasn't really Pharaoh versus Moses. It was Pharaoh versus God's promises. So God's work to deliver Moses and mock Pharaoh is very significant. We don't actually know why it's Moses at this point. We haven't got that yet. But we do know that God has just delivered the man he chose despite the best efforts of the most powerful man on earth. Well, what does this mean for us? Because laughing at an ancient pharaoh is all going to be good fun. And until the mummy returns yet again, he's unlikely to wreak vengeance on us. But just like Moses made a mockery of Israel's greatest enemy, Jesus has made a mockery of everyone's greatest enemy. And that enemy is the devil. Well, like Pharaoh, it's useful to see the similarities, because like Pharaoh, the devil opposes God by attacking his promises. God promises a numerous people to Abraham. Pharaoh tries to destroy Israel's children. And the devil's given the power of death. God promises relationship with him to Abraham. Pharaoh, instead, wants to keep Israel in slavery under him. And the devil tells us our sin will condemn us and we'll never be accepted by God. We'll never have that relationship with God. But just like Moses made a mockery of Pharaoh, Jesus made a mockery of the devil. And when Jesus rose, he disarmed the devil. Death was defeated. Condemnation was removed. This probably sounds impossible. How can death have been defeated and sin dealt with 2,000 years ago? Well, God did it. We just saw him defeat a powerful enemy, a powerful king, completely effortlessly. Pharaoh couldn't stand up to God at all. I mean, how silly it would be to think that someone like Pharaoh could beat God. Well, in the same way, death is no match at all for God. And how silly it would be to think that death could stop the one who creates life from doing what he wants. God did it. The devil's disarmed, and Jesus' resurrection made a mockery of the most terrifying enemy in the world. So because of this, we can actually sing to one another, mocking the power of death and condemnation. I don't think I'll sing it, but the song goes like this. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? And these words, they're not the unrealistic optimism of a modern songwriter. They're lifted straight from 1 Corinthians. So that is a song we can sing with confidence. So we've seen with this episode of Israel's history, the question for the Israelite grandson would be, who are you going to fear? Are you going to fear the enemy nation, which looks so powerful and oppressive? Or are you going to fear the God who took a baby and defeated the most powerful man in the world? And for a Christian, great-great-great-great-great-grandchild, your question, my question, who are we going to fear? An enemy that wields death and that says God would never have you? Or the God who defeated death and removed condemnation by raising Jesus? But there's actually still more to get from this passage, so we'll move on to the second point now. If you've been following this carefully, you might notice, if we were there in the story, we'd actually still be in slavery in Egypt. I mean, maybe we'd respect and fear God a little more because of Moses. We'll say, oh, did you know about that guy? He escaped. He's out there. But we'd still be there. And the big question would be, can we believe in God? Can we trust in him? Can we hope in him? And so I've called this second point, Israel versus Pharaoh, a hopeless situation. And it does look hopeless, doesn't it? It's been a very long, crushing grind. Moses is 80 years old when he finally comes back. That means two more generations born into this harsh, punishing slavery. And it doesn't look like all this fuss over one man has actually done anything for the average Israelite. There's a new Pharaoh, sure, but it's the same old problem. But again, you might have called me out on this and guessed this already. I've been a bit naughty with the section title. I'd like you to cross it out again. So please cross out a hopeless situation and try and work out what to put in its place at the end of the next discussion time. So I'm going to hand over to you now. First, we're going to see how bad it is, and then we're going to see what hope there is. So you've got about 8 minutes again to work through discussion three on your sheets. And can I call us back together? Well, I hope you managed to spend some time in those final verses, 23 to 25. Sorry, I was a bit slow with pushing our group through stuff, so we didn't get to spend too long, but I think you guys got there a bit earlier. But I found just listening to those words in verse 23 to 25 was an amazing encouragement. And if you think about the readers then, original listeners, listening to those verses, I think they'd be very encouraged. Their cry came up to God. God heard, God remembered, God saw, God knew. Bit of contrast, isn't it, from God being actually a bit absent during, or at least he's absent in name during the Moses section. Suddenly, God heard, God remembered, God saw, God knew. We could talk about all of these for a bit, but I'm just going to focus in on one of them and try and understand it a bit better. Just one to think about. God remembered. God remembered. Well, actually, God remembers, but he doesn't forget. It's a bit of a weird contrast there. He remembers, he doesn't forget. When God remembers a promise, what it really means is he's about to act to fulfill that promise. He's about to act to fulfill it. And you can see this if you search for the phrase God remembered through Genesis. And it comes up in a few key moments. Here they are. So God remembers Noah, and he makes the floodwaters subside. Down they go. Then God remembers Abraham, and he rescues Lot from Sodom. And then God remembers Rachel and gives her a child. So God remembered means God acted to fulfill his promise. God remembering isn't like the forgetful, ooh, oops, just remembered it's your birthday, and I should have got you a present. Well, Amazon Prime Now to the rescue, I think. A little air freshener for our cat, maybe? Ah, yes, good. In time for the evening, just before you go to bed. That's not what it's like. It's not what it's like at all. Instead, it's like God remembering. God remembering is more like, well, I've been planning this for ages, but now I'm remembering your birthday, and it's showtime. I'm remembering your birthday, it's showtime. So those words, God remembered in verse 24, would be so exciting to read. As a reader, the suspense is built up, and it's time for the main event. So this passage really ends with the curtain going up. It's time for God's big reveal. Just how will he act to remember his promise to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob? That promise, which was a large nation in their own land, in close relationship to God, the God who made everything. Well, in chapter 2, we've already seen that the opposition's power is laughable, completely laughable, compared to God's. But there'll actually be much more to learn about God as he remembers his promise. There's quite a few chapters as it unfolds, this God remembered, God acting to fulfill his promise. So this, right now in Exodus 2, I think it's a very exciting moment. Lots of tension built up, and it's kind of the series thing. Come back next week, see what happens. But I'm just about to hand over to you for the final discussion. And well done, you've had to do basically all the work here, because lots of discussion, lots of questions. Just before, maybe can you grab a pen and write down my best stab at a summary, just so you've got a best stab at a summary, which I won't make you cross out this time. So here it is. God wins, God remembers, whom shall I fear? That's it. God wins. God remembers. Whom shall I fear? So now time for your final few minutes of discussion. You've got about 7 minutes until the end of our evening. Please pray at the end. Maybe something to pray. You can praise God for his power and for always remembering his promises. And we can also ask for a right fear of him he wants us to have. So over to you.